It's 8:35. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. And next, we turn our attention to food and local food, to be more precise. But this time, we're going to look at it from a global perspective because there is a global event starting August 16th. It's a local food summit, but it's all happening online, so it has a global reach. But the organiser is right here in our studio. It's Michael Brownlee, who has a long history of food localisation in Colorado, and he's the author of The Local Food Shift, How Humanity Will Feed Itself in Uncertain Times, and co-publisher of The Local Food Shift magazine. I'm very pleased to have you in the studio. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. It's great to be here, Maeve. Thanks.
And joining us also, we have Daniel Asher, who is living the dream, many would say, by being the co-founder of River and Woods, which is a Boulder restaurant that strives to build a true community restaurant. And he's on the front line of the local food movement. And I'm very pleased to get you out of the kitchen and into the studio this morning. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
So as I said, this is quite an interesting event because it's a local food summit talking about local food, but it's happening really globally because it's all happening online. Is that correct?
It is all online. It's actually, our focus is national. The focus is U.S., although we're leaking out beyond a bit. But, you know, there's never been a national local food conference in the United States. And, you know, that kind of makes sense because everybody is focused on what they're doing locally. But we felt that it's time to circle the wagons. And the only way to do that in a sustainable, regenerative way is to do it as a virtual conference, all online.
Because you really, no carbon footprint attached with this. Certainly people not getting on planes and flying here.
That's right. You know, most conferences, if you look at all of the money that gets spent towards travel and lodging and booking venues and all that, sometimes it's millions of dollars. And
so how will it all play out? I know that you have had preview videos that you've been, teasing people with, but enticing people with being released over the past few weeks or so. There's one today with Vicki Robbins.
Vicki Robbins, the author of Blessing the Hands That Feed Us and Your Money or Your Life. Yeah, best-selling author. So since February, we have been doing interviews with many of the key leaders and authors and elders in the local food movement and recording those. And so the summit, which starts on August 6th, for 10 days, we will be playing all of these, it's all scheduled out over the 10-day period, but for free, people will be able to access all of those interviews. So there's more than 70 of them that will be available.
Who's your target audience with this?
Good question. Our target audience is people who really feel called to be involved in local food, who are beginning to see that the local food movement needs to move to a whole new level of effectiveness and impact and scale.
So is that anyone from a food consumer, someone who eats and is interested in supporting a local food movement here locally?
Certainly, but this is specifically more for the people at the front lines of the local food movement who've been at this for a while and realize now we need to take this to a whole new level, a level that we call a local food revolution.
Well, Daniel Asher, you are one of those people who is at the front line of the local food movement. As a restaurateur, you have for a long time really been supportive of locally grown agriculture. So what role do restaurants have to play in supporting local food?
Well, I think restaurants, chefs, people that are in the culinary industry, food service in general, have a deep responsibility to connect with the community of eaters that come join them at their tables every afternoon and every evening. I think we're very much like the messengers and the stewards of that concept of supporting our local agricultural community. And we need to keep that message very clear. We need to keep that message very vibrant and engaging. It's a dialogue that we need to have at our tables every night. It's a story that we need to tell. It's a story that needs to be told. I think there's a lot of attention and press and media flow that always goes towards chefs as far as, you know, who's doing what and, you know, this is a new dish that so-and-so is launching. And I really think the spotlight needs to be shifted towards the farmers because those are the true heroes of our food system. They're the ones that grow the food that sustains us. So I think there needs to be a large focus on the people that are actually putting seeds in the ground and growing the food that we eat, there needs to be more resources pushed in that direction. There needs to be more energy pushed in that direction. And I think it's the dialogue that happens in restaurants that can create the synergy that's needed to push the needle in that direction.
So in your restaurant, do you plan your menu around local food, or do you have your menu and see how you might incorporate local food into it?
That's a great question. I'm personally very inspired by what's happening seasonally. I think that language expresses what's happening in the ground, and then that enables me to communicate through the plates on the table. So I very much look at what's coming in season, what's happening, and then that inspires dishes that you know, our team puts together and is able to, you know, that way you're getting everything at the peak of flavor. It's just what's happening currently in our region. You know, I think when things like our peaches come in season, our cherries, which are happening now, you know, these are amazing moments in time that we can literally captivate our audience with what is coming out of the ground, what is coming off of the trees. And it's incredible. I mean, this is the bounty of Colorado. This is the language of our region as far as what is growing right now, what is thriving, what is expressing itself.
Well, when we say local, I mean, what does that mean to you? Is that Boulder County? Is it Colorado? Is it regional?
I think first and foremost, it's as close as possible to where we stand right now. I think the closer we are to the food that is grown enables us to have the highest level of nutrition, the closest relationship to the people that are actually part of our food system. And then you can radiate outward from that pinpoint. But I think it starts with exactly where you are. And then going outward, obviously, Colorado being the focus, I think regionally is also extremely important. But, you know, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to eat pineapple right now when we've got, you know, these incredible stone fruits that are flowing so beautifully.
That's Daniel Asher. He's a co-founder of River and Woods. It's a Boulder restaurant, and he's joining us on a public affair on KGNU this morning to talk about the role restaurants have to play in supporting a local food shed. This is all ahead of the upcoming Local Food Summit happening online August 6th through 16th. It's the brainchild of Michael Brownlee, who has been on KGNU many times talking about local food. He's really at the forefront of the local food movement. Michael, when we say local, what does local mean to you personally, but also in the context of what's happening nationally?
It means that we all need to be eating food that is grown as locally as possible. I mean, that's really the standard, as local as possible. And depending upon what it is, it may be some distance away. For instance, we can't grow coffee here, but we need coffee, you know. But we'll bring it in from as close as we can, you know. So I want to come back to Daniel here, because Daniel plays a key role in the Local Food Summit as a chef and as someone who is so passionate and engaged with farmers and ranchers and growers and producers. We asked Daniel to be one of our hosts of the Local Food Summit. So he is actually interviewing these people and bringing his passion and his insight and his boundless enthusiasm and curiosity to all this. So people really want to tune in to Daniel's interviews. Yeah.
Well, we're linking to the website where people can find out more about the Local Food Summit. It's at kgnu.org. It happens August 6th through 16th. And as we said, it is online. So really, it's available to everyone globally. But in terms of how we're doing here locally, how are we doing? Boulder County, Colorado, surrounding counties, how are we doing in terms of supporting local food?
Not as well as we might think. You know, despite the popularity and high visibility of local food in Colorado, we're still at less than 2% local. You know, maybe slightly more than that in Boulder County, but in general throughout Colorado, less than 2%.
Now, if you look at all the food that's been grown in the state, does that mean we're exporting most of it?
That's right. This is an export economy, you know, especially in agriculture. And that's true across the country. Actually, the average across the country is 1% local. The main exception is Vermont, which has gotten to 10% local after 15 years of really working hard on it. But that they only have 600,000 people. I mean, they're smaller than the city of Denver. So we have a long way to go in localizing our food system and taking back our food supply from the industrial food system, which is really killing us. You know, that more than half of the people who die each year in the United States and in Europe die from food-related illnesses. That's the cost of
chronic illnesses that are exacerbated by food, or what exactly do
really
you mean?
Really caused by food. I mean, we're ingesting poisons into our system through the industrial food supply. So our industrial food is killing us, and we now need to bring it back to the local, where it's clean, fresh, free of chemicals, and so that we can restore our health, restore our food sovereignty, and achieve food security, maybe for the first time in 100 years in this country.
Well, I'd like to get into some of what you said there, because you say free of chemicals and clean and all fresh and all of that. Yeah. I think we have an image of local food as all of that. But what is the intersection between organics, locally grown? Because there's a lot of food grown locally that's not organic, that is GMO, all of these things that, from what you have just said, you don't agree with, and yet it is local.
Well, it may be grown in the area. I mean, there's industrial food being grown right here that is GMOs, that is fossil fuel-based, but it's not grown for local people. It's not grown to feed people locally. It's grown to feed animals and cars, you know, primarily.
So you're talking about corn.
Yeah, corn, soybeans, wheat. You know, these are the main commodity crops that the industrial food system is built on. And unfortunately, the chemicals that are being used in those are contaminating the rest of everything that's grown around them. So it's very difficult here. So most of our producers in the area, even though they may not be certified organic, you know, USDA certified, their standards are much higher than USDA. So people who are growing food for the local community, we have learned, go way out of their way to produce the highest quality and make sure that it's healthy for people.
Yeah, there's a very high level of integrity and intention, I think, within our local growing scene. I think there's a high level of animal stewardship, husbandry, just making sure that everything is being done properly, because these are the individuals that want to connect with their immediate community. I think for such a long time, people have been completely disconnected with where their food comes from. It's just our food system has been based on just recklessly answering a collection of cravings. Like, oh, I'm in the mood for this now. I'm going to go to the store and get it. But there's a consciousness that needs to shift towards what is happening right now in my food system. And the way to do that is to create these relationships and these conversations with our local farms, whether it's joining a CSA or going to a farmer's market. It's about engaging what is actually happening on the ground right now, and that collectively will enhance our awareness of our local food system.
Well, in terms of the economics of this, and I actually just got back from touring around the state of Colorado, looking at water issues related to the Colorado River, and I got to meet some peach growers, some in Grand Valley, and then also some around Paonia, and something came up quite a bit, the economics of scale. The peach growers I happened to meet and the other farmers I met were organic farmers. But they also say that sometimes when we put that organic label on the farm, there's the, you know, certifying it being organic. But people are disappointed when they see, well, actually, you're very big. We were kind of thinking more of a mom and pop style farm when I want to support a local farm. And so in terms of the economics of scale, is it possible to have a local food chip, local food shed without larger farms? Because it seems very difficult when you're trying to do it on a smaller scale. Do you know what I'm asking?
Sure. We're going to need larger farms, but we cannot adopt industrialized monoculture methods that the industrial food system has. I mean, that's really the key. So not all of our farms are going to be 3 to 5 acres. You know, we are going to need a few that go far beyond that. But usually people who are growing food for people in a local region have very diverse operations. So they're growing multiple types of crops, and they're giving the land an opportunity to be enriched. They're building soil as they're doing it, rather than depleting the soil like the industrial food system does.
That's Michael Brownlee, who's the organizer of the upcoming Local Food Summit. It's all happening online August 6th through 16th, but Michael has for a long time been working locally to create a local food shed here. We're also joined by Daniel Asher, a local restaurateur. He is with River and Wood, which is a Boulder restaurant. And you say you want to be a true community restaurant. What does that mean?
Well, that means speaking the language of what the community wants, and that's a story that we tell through our food. So about a third of our menu is community sourced, so we solicit recipes from our guests to share with us, whether it's a old family recipe going back generations or whether it's just something great that they had growing up. We want that recipe. We want to prepare it. You know, I'll put together a version of it that makes sense for a restaurant style experience, and then we put it on the menu, and on the back of the menu is their story and why they shared that with us and the significance of the dish, which I think is really important because food crosses all boundaries of spirituality, politics, religion, race, creed, vision. Food is a language that is universal. It's something we all relate to. It's something we all need to do to survive. So I think engaging people with recipes and the stories of their dishes alongside ours enables us to, you know, speak that vision at a better level.
Here in Boulder and the Denver area, there are a lot of restaurants now who say where they source their food from, and a lot of places now are putting the label local and community as a label on their business. Is it being co-opted a little bit? I mean, how can consumers truly know that this is a truly mission-driven enterprise? And you know, Michael and Daniel, you can weigh in on this. Do you think this issue of local food is being co-opted a little bit by corporate entities?
Of course it is, and there are stories across the country how that's happening. But the answer to that is the same as, you know, knowing about our food. You need to know your farmer, you need to know your chef, you know, and you need to ask questions about where the food is coming from. One of the really encouraging things that I first learned about River and Woods from Daniel, I asked him one day, well, as he was building the restaurant, who's the target market for your restaurant? He said, this neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's, you know, I think that the term, you know, local, sustainable, these are all words that are extremely valuable. And I also think they get taken advantage of a lot because of that intrinsic value. But I think at the end of the day, you know, integrity comes down to what you do when nobody's watching. And I think that's really what this comes down to. And having these relationships that people are seeking the right answers for, I mean, people can smell, you know, integrity. I think people intuitively know when something makes sense and when something doesn't make a lot of sense. And you also have to make sure that, you know, your staff is educated properly to continue this message and that your guests leave feeling like they've connected with something bigger than just being hungry and coming in and being fed. You know, there's concepts like Michael had mentioned, as far as taking care of the land, you know, holistic land management when it comes to, you know, pasture raised cattle. You know, regenerative agriculture, which is something that the Savory Institute here has been a pillar of, you know, supporting, encouraging, and educating people on. These there's ways of handling the earth that need to happen. It's not even a question of should we. It's just it needs to happen because of what we've done, the damage that needs to be repaired. And there's a lot of tools and resources now that are manifesting at a very accelerated rate to help steer us back in that proper direction. But Michael's 100% correct. Getting away from this huge, large agribusiness concept of, you know, giant monocrop production and shifting into a more local, diverse utilization of the land in a more intelligent manner, and having people that want to eat and enjoy these amazing ingredients that are locally produced. There's no reason to buy an apple from Chile when we can get one from Paonia and the Western Slope. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
How do we stop this from becoming an elitist thing where those with resources can access these wonderful locally grown food, given that often it can be more expensive than the imported apple or tomato from another hemisphere?
For sure, of course. No, this is something that is very near and dear to myself. I think clean, healthy, beautifully grown food needs to be accessible to everyone. This is not an income bracket related movement.
It needs to be a right.
Yes, this is a social justice movement. And it's about distribution. It's about production. There's so many factors affecting it. A lot of it also has to do with food waste. To be honest, I just got back from Washington, D.C., you know, lobbying on behalf of aspects of the 2018 Farm Bill as it relates to food waste in conjunction with the Environmental Working Group and Food Policy Action and the Harvard School of Food Policy and Law. And we were talking about the fact that 40% of what we grow, produce, and distribute in this country ends up in the garbage while people go to bed wondering where their next meal is going to come from. So we can actually solve food insecurity in America with a percentage of what we throw away. So that is something that literally needs to come to the table, pun intended.
Is there an opportunity to have some type of labeling or certification program like we've done with organics, either for restaurants or food that we buy at the grocery store around local? Because I know there is that Colorado Proud sticker that people can get. Would that be helpful at all for people who want to buy local?
If it comes from the producers themselves, maybe. But if it's another government label, I don't think we need that.
No more bureaucracy.
Please.
Well, you mentioned...
You know, people have said it better than I. You know, the government has no role in agriculture. It's the work of the people.
But we're not even going to get into subsidies here because I think that's a whole other show. Geez. Unless
but,
you want to...
But that's the reason why local, organic, fresh food is so expensive compared to industrially produced food, because industrially produced food is totally subsidized.
Well, to that end, and really to what you were saying, Daniel, about being out and really focusing on the farm bill, what can be done to support locally grown food around the country, not just here in Colorado?
Well, you know, I get asked this a lot. You know, what can I do? And I say, well, the first thing is to stop eating industrial food. I mean, just stop, give it up. And remember that friends don't let friends eat industrial food. I mean, that's where we start. And then we all learn how to grow at least some of our own food. And then we all get involved in educating our community about our food system so that we can make decisions about our food system together as communities.
Daniel, do you have anything on that? Particularly when you've just come back from D.C. talking about the Farm Bill, what can be done maybe at a legislative level?
Well, sure. Yeah. This? And you know, Play to the Union is it was the initiative that set all this in motion as an organization collectively. Gathering this momentum to push the 2018 Farm Bill in a direction that, you know, the Farm Bill before has never gone, which is essential with what we're talking about. But I think it really comes down to, you know, people vote with their dollars. Every time we go get a meal or we go purchase a beverage, we're telling the government what we want, what we're okay with. We're telling these businesses what we feel is acceptable for us. So it's not necessarily about convenience anymore. It's about being a little bit thoughtful with where something comes from and where you're at in that moment in time. So while it may be convenient to be filling up with gas and, oh, I'm hungry and I'm thirsty, I'm going to run into this little mini mart and grab a bottle of X and a package of Y, that's extremely convenient, but it's not particularly thoughtful or mindful. And that's what people need to do, is they need to take an extra step. And it's not related to craving. It's not related to convenience. It's actually related to their relationship with themselves and their community around them. And taking that extra level of reflection and say, wait, I think I should actually support this local company that's doing this. Or I think I should go visit this farm and set up that CSA program I was talking about to have a local food box for my family and I can, you know, cook. What happens at our tables, at home, in our families, the culture that's created around food is building integrity with our children. And that is literally what they then bring with them into the world. And having that culture of family cooking and gathering around a meal is what can solve most of our problems right now.
I have to say that really resonated with me. I've just spent the last week driving around the state of Colorado, and I was high up because I was in a coach looking down, and the amount of people eating in their cars fast food. And a lot of times kids in the backseat also eating in their cars fast food. We have a very strange relationship with our food. But in the last couple of moments that we have, I want to let people know that the Local Food Summit is happening online August 6th through 16th. We're linking to the website where you can find out more and register at kgnu.org. Daniel Asher, you're going to be doing some of the interviews. Who will you be speaking with?
Oh my gosh, it's been fantastic. And there's still a few more to do. But I had the pleasure of interviewing Richard McCarthy, the executive director of Slow Food USA, local chef extraordinaire, farmer, rancher, author Eric Skokin from Bramble and Hare and Black Cat, Marcus McCauley, McCauley Farms, incredible farm growing vegetables, organic chickens, really incredible stuff. We're talking about seeds through Jared Huggett with Lineage Seed Company. Wendy Lou McGill, we're talking about eating insects raised locally, crickets, as a form of sustainable protein instead of eating, as far as eating less animals is concerned. We need to shift in a direction of more plant-based diet, and insects fit into that concept as well. So there's been, you know, a phenomenal turnout as far as enthusiasm and anticipation of this summit, and I'm completely honored to be a part of it, and I can't wait to see the content myself, because it's pretty extraordinary, and people really need to dial in and download this stuff on a profound emotional level.
Well,
and
Michael, what else can people expect?
The main thing I want to communicate is that all of the content of the Local Food Summit from August 6th to 16th is free. You know, so people can access all of that online for free. And later, if they want, they can purchase lifetime access to all of it as well.
We're linking to the website at kgnu.org, and people can find out more about that. But in the meantime, I'd like to thank my two guests this morning, Michael Brownlee, who's the organizer of the upcoming Local Food Summit, and Daniel Asher, a local restaurateur, co-founder of River and Woods. And he'll be participating in a really significant way in conversation with many of these national leaders in local food. Local Food Summit happens August 6th through 16th. Thank you both very much for coming in.
Thank you so much. Eat local, support organic agriculture.